If you live in Florida, chances are you've heard about or read about harmful algae blooms. Maybe you've read about red tide or are worried about blue-green algae. We've received so many requests about this topic, so on today's episode, you'll learn all about harmful algae blooms and algae in general.
Welcome to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. I'm Lara Milligan.
And I'm Shannon Carnevale.
This podcast is brought to you by UF IFAS Extension in Polk and Pinellas counties.
As you might recall from our last episode, Lara and I have a survey open right now to get your feedback about the Naturally Florida podcast. And if you've already filled it out, you know that there is a question about what topics you might want to hear us talk about in one of our future episodes. And that, I'm so excited to say, is the inspiration for today's episode. So if you didn't know, we ask you what you want to hear about in the survey. Now you do. The link is in the show notes. Please fill it out. But today we're going to talk about algae in our waterways. Isn't that right, Lara?
Yes, I am very excited to share all about algae with everybody today. We're going to talk about harmful algae blooms, just general algae blooms, what they are, all the things. So prepare to nerd out with me and Shannon.
So much to talk about with algae. So why don't we start off with defining algae like we like to do at the beginning of our episodes? What is the thing we're actually talking about?
Yes. So for this one, we're going to say, what are algae? And they're kind of weird. They're not plants because they lack true roots and leaves. So we just say that they are plant-like organisms, and plant-like because they are capable of photosynthesizing. So take that for what it is.
And as a reminder, for those of us who haven't thought about photosynthesis since high school biology, that is taking the sun's energy and turning it into food.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. And in the case of algae, it can vary significantly from microscopic, single-celled phytoplankton, you might also remember that from high school, all the way up to the larger seaweed that we are more familiar with. So,
right. And one that Floridians or frequent visitors to Florida might be familiar with is sargassum. That's a macroalgae. Is that right?
Yeah. That's definitely one. And one that we're actually starting to see a lot of issues with tons of it washing up on beaches, really all around the world, but more recently here in Florida. With these algae, one thing that's important to keep in mind, so we mentioned that they do photosynthesis, so they need access to sunlight. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they have a high preference for clear water or that they just exist near the surface, which is often when we think of algae blooms, I think we often think of like discolored water near the surface. And that's why they are near the surface.
Right. And algae get a real bad rap, right? So most people listening are probably thinking, I don't love algae. I don't think they're a good thing, but they are. They're really important in our ecosystems, both locally and worldwide. In our urban forestry episode, we talked about how one of the benefits of trees was all the oxygen they produce and the fresh air we can breathe. But that's also a function of algae. Up to 50% of the oxygen we breathe comes from algae in our water systems. They have a lot of other ecologically important functions as well, though. They contribute to carbon sequestration, nutrient and pollutant removals, and they're also the primary production of aquatic food webs. When we think of the food web, when we're talking about wildlife, we always talk about how the little things add up to the big things in the food web, and algae are about as small as they get. So they are the base of many of our aquatic food webs.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point to make. Like Shannon said, I just feel like there's a negative connotation or like association with algae, but they are really critical, not only to our life, but really all life on this planet. Mm-hmm. So Shannon mentioned the term cyanobacteria, which is often referred to as blue-green algae. Now, just a clarifier that cyanobacteria is in fact a bacteria. It is just a photosynthesizing bacteria. So it kind of gets lumped into this plant-like group with algae. So they're often kind of just lumped together. And so we're going to talk about both of them in today's episode. So now that we know that cyanobacteria and algae can kind of be lumped together, we're going to talk about this idea of algae blooms, because when we're talking about algae blooms, it could be a blue-green algae / cyanobacteria, mm-hmm. or many other species of algae, which we're going to talk a little bit more about. I was talking with Dr. Lisa Krimsky, who is also with UF IFAS Extension. She's our water resources specialized agent down in South Florida. And she defined what an algae bloom is in just such an eloquent way that I thought it would be better to hear from her. So let's hear what Lisa had to say.
So in general, an algae bloom is the rapid and substantial increase in algae biomass in an aquatic system. And this happens fairly regularly in aquatic systems and is not necessarily indicative of something going wrong in that aquatic system.
So now that we know what algae blooms are, I think it's a good point to just make known that algae blooms are a natural process. The first scientifically documented algae bloom in the United States occurred in the Gulf, kind of near Panama City in the Panhandle area in 1844 is when that was first documented. So algae blooms happen.
And that's true in freshwater too. So freshwater algae blooms are also a natural process. They happen throughout the summer, generally speaking. They can occur in the winter, but they're more common in the summer. And there is a point where an algae bloom becomes maybe less naturally occurring. Like maybe humans have impacted this water body in such a way that is making algae blooms either last longer or make them more intense. And that's when we start to cross over into this category that Lara is going to talk about with the harmful algae blooms.
Yeah. And we also asked Dr. Lisa Krimsky to define a harmful algal bloom and kind of what makes that different from just the algal bloom that she defined before. So let's hear what Lisa had to say.
A harmful algal bloom is an algal bloom or an increase in that rapid biomass that produces either toxic or harmful effects on human health or aquatic ecosystems.
And it's also important to note that harmful algal blooms are also a natural process. They occur even where human impacts don't really exist. But the duration of the blooms, if they're lasting for a really long time, can indicate that there's an ecosystem imbalance going on. So I think Shannon's going to talk about what it takes, like what determines the growth of algae. There's some key elements to consider, and that might kind of help us understand this process a little bit more.
Yeah, we're talking about an increase in biomass, as Dr. Krimsky said. So what causes that increase in biomass? And it's really just a perfect storm of the things that algae needs to grow. So at its most surface level, we're talking about increased sunlight, nutrients, temperature, and time. So remember, they're photosynthesizing organisms. Whether they are true algae or if they're cyanobacteria, they need sunlight to grow. So if there's an abundance of sunlight, they may be able to grow faster. And just like any other organism on Earth, they need nutrition or nutrients to grow well. So these could be nutrients that are either naturally occurring in the system or have been brought in by human activities such as stormwater. As you'll remember from our stormwater episode, everything in a city that gets washed away in the rain winds up in a surface water body. And those increase in nutrients, for example, fertilizers, can help algae and cyanobacteria grow. Remember, I said that they're more common in the warmer summer months, and that is because temperature plays a big role in how fast algae is growing. And then finally, time. We need to have an increase in biomass or an increase in algae over a certain amount of time, and that growth can become exponential, and that's when we start to see things like a bloom.
Yeah, and those are really the high points. It's really complex what causes algae blooms. Like for me on the coast, we have the currents and the tides to factor in and the movement, how that's going to move the algae around. Salinity is also a factor to consider. So now when it comes to harmful algal blooms, they tend to have competitive traits that really allow them to kind of outcompete other species. So Shannon was talking a lot about cyanobacteria and blue-green algae as it relates to freshwater in her area, and they are a common species associated with harmful algal blooms in freshwater. And for me, on the coastal side, for saltwater systems, most of the algae species are something called dinoflagellates. And dinoflagellates are really cool. One of the competitive traits that they have is the ability to move. And so they, as their name suggests, dinoflagellates, if you can again recall back to high school biology class, have something called a flagella. It's like this little, I don't know, wiggly tail, microscopic, that allows them to move vertically up and down the water column.
Cyanobacteria can move up and down in the water column also. They have something called a gas vacuole, which is essentially a small structure that they can fill or constrict with air, and it affects their buoyancy. So it's less active than the dinoflagellates that Lara mentioned, but they have some ability to move up and down the water column too.
Yeah, and this ability to move helps them to capitalize on sunlight during the day so they can be closer to the surface, and then nutrients towards the bottom of the water at night. Now, we mentioned these are photosynthesizing organisms, but they're actually considered mixotrophic. So in addition to making their own sugars and food, they can also eat other organisms. So that's another competitive trait that they have. Both the cyanobacteria and these dinoflagellate species can reproduce sexually or asexually, which obviously aids in their numbers growing pretty quickly. And then they can also fix nitrogen, which that is just a fancy way of saying that they can take nitrogen out of the atmosphere and convert it into a form that they need for plant growth. And a lot of these harmful algal bloom species don't taste good, so that also allows them to outcompete some of the more beneficial algae. So all of those combined really aid them to create these massive blooms. And then a lot of these species are produce toxins, and that's what gives them, again, that harmful algal bloom status.
And speaking of toxins, which is what I think we're all really concerned about when we start talking about harmful algae blooms, there are a lot of ways that these toxins impact humans. And I'm just going to list a couple of them here. You can go into a lot more detail in our show notes and by looking these up online. So the first one is through the consumption of fish and shellfish. If the fish and shellfish are affected by a harmful algae bloom, you can also have symptoms that come from eating them. You can also have respiratory irritation if you're breathing in the air adjacent to or near a red tide or cyanobacteria bloom. And if you're talking about freshwater cyanobacteria, you're also going to need to be concerned with contaminated drinking water or irrigation water that might be contaminated with a harmful algae bloom. Fortunately, most Floridians get their drinking water from groundwater and not surface water. The groundwater being underground and away from sunlight is not something that we are concerned with when we're talking about harmful algae blooms. But surface water, which is lakes, rivers, and so forth, that is where you can start to see harmful algae blooms when it comes to irrigation and drinking water. So if you have an irrigation pump that's connected to a local lake or river, this is something that you might want to be concerned about. It's just important to know where your water is coming from. I would also be remiss if I didn't mention that this is still an emerging issue. This is an area where lots of researchers are looking into the impacts of harmful algae blooms, particularly on coastal communities, both marine and freshwater. And we don't have a lot of answers on long-term repeated exposure to harmful algae blooms yet. So what we would suggest is follow the best practices that we'll talk about in our call to action section, and just avoid being in or near water that might have a harmful algae bloom active.
Wow, Shannon, that was a lot. And I have more to add on the wildlife and ecosystem impact side of things. So when it comes to algae blooms, I think a lot of people often think about fish kills, which is definitely a real issue as it relates to algae blooms. And that can either be directly by the toxins themselves killing the fish or from low dissolved oxygen. So basically, the algae can be so dense on the surface that it blocks the sunlight and leads to death of organisms within the water body that are producing the oxygen, think plants, that need sunlight. And so with low dissolved oxygen in the water column, we can have death of organisms in that water body.
I do want to add that fish kills can be natural in Florida, especially in our freshwater systems when it's been really, really hot. So if you have a small number of dead fish, especially in lakes, after a few days of cloudy weather, when the clouds clear and all of a sudden there's intense summer sun and heat, the lack of the sunlight during those cloudy days can also result in a drop in dissolved oxygen, which can cause some sick or older fish to perish in the low oxygen conditions. This is especially common in lakes that have high numbers of tilapia because they also tend to spawn in the summer, and that extra stress makes them extra susceptible to a summer fish kill. but these would be a lot smaller numbers of dead fish than a fish kill caused by an algae bloom.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point to make. And kind of a bigger ecosystem impact, similar to what Shannon was alluding to, is when we have these large algae blooms and the lack of sunlight due to the algae bloom in specific areas. So there's been massive coverage on this in the news. There can be significant declines of seagrasses, which need that sunlight in order to grow. And some species, like the manatee, literally need the seagrass in order to survive. And without it, they die. And we have seen really significant die-offs. Basically, the manatees are, it sounds awful, but it's the reality of it. They're starving to death because the seagrass is simply not available to them. So it can have kind of this ecosystem cascade effect as well. Now, switching over to socioeconomic impacts, we over here on the coast, I can relate to a lot of these, but if we have, like with the sargassum that we talked about earlier, if that washes up on shore, I mean, it is insane amounts and there are significant cleanup costs to that. And it can also have significant impacts to tourism and businesses, because I promise you, you do not want to be near sargassum when it's washed up on shore and rotting. It's just gross. It looks gross. All the things.
The smell is so intense.
In certain areas, Shannon alluded to this, there can be impacts to water supply. There can be fishery closures. That's definitely a real impact. Human health issues, which again, Shannon alluded to. And then coastal property values can also be impacted if there's kind of this persistent known impact of these algae blooms.
Or even just a perceived impact.
Right. Yeah.
And with all these impacts we just discussed, it might sound like this is a pretty terrible thing. And well, you know, it can be. So as a result of that, we have a ton of people working on harmful algae blooms in Florida. State agencies in Florida are monitoring more than 50 different species that are known to cause harmful algae blooms in the state, and they're all working together. We have the Department of Environmental Protection, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, Florida's Department of Agriculture and Consumer Sciences, Department of Health, federal partners, NOAA, USGS, university researchers, independent nonprofits. I mean, the list really goes on and on. And you can see some of that work that they're doing by going to the website protectingfloridatogether.gov, and we'll put that link in our show notes. But the important thing is we have a lot of coastline. A lot of our natural resources and our tourism depends on water in Florida. We have over 11,000 miles of river, streams, and waterways, 76,000 stormwater ponds, over 7,000 lakes, 700 springs. I mean, the list goes on and on. These kinds of impacts of harmful algae blooms affect every corner of the state and many corners of our economy. And that's why it's so important in Florida. If you think about how Florida has developed, and we've talked about this in a couple episodes now, our stormwater episode, our urban forestry episode, the change in land use is affecting algae blooms in our state. And so if you recall that section about how algae grows, I talked about nutrients being in the water. Now, we've talked about that in those episodes that I mentioned, but some examples of sources of excess nutrients could be fertilizer, and that could be urban or agricultural. We're also talking about municipal stormwater, septic systems, animal waste, industrial effluent, and just the overall change in land use, especially in areas that once percolated a lot of rain into the soil. When we develop those with impervious surfaces like roads and buildings and sidewalks, all that stormwater goes somewhere. And that somewhere is our surface water.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a really good transition to our first call to action, Shannon, intentional setup or not. So one thing that, and again, I feel like we say this in a lot of our episodes, but I think it's very important. So really anything that you can do to limit your contribution to excess nutrients entering our waterways is going to be very helpful. So for fertilizer, one of the things that we stress is really to learn your plants and fertilize only when necessary. Don't fertilize on a schedule, and make sure that you follow the label on your fertilizer so you're applying the proper amounts. If you are mowing your grass, blow the grass clippings back into your landscape. If you ever see anybody blowing them down the storm drain, A, that's illegal. B, that's another story, but just don't do it. Any plants that you can install in your landscape will help to slow the flow of water and hopefully slow it enough to allow the plants to filter out some of the pollutants and maybe excess nutrients that are in there. And then if you have downspouts, is that the right term? Shannon, help me.
Gutters and downspouts.
Gutters. Downspouts. Yes, and your gutters. If you can direct those to green areas, I so often see this, Shannon. I don't know if you do too.
Oh, yeah.
See them pointed directly down the driveway, which, you know, it makes sense, like get the water off of my property. But if you can direct it into a green space, it again allows that water to infiltrate, percolate, A, recharge our aquifer, hopefully, but B, most importantly, filter out those excess nutrients that are in there. Another call to action is simply to learn more about your ecosystem's occurrence of harmful algal blooms. And there's some really amazing resources for you. There's something called the Florida Algal Bloom Dashboard that is put together by the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. And we will link that for you in the show notes if you want to scope that out, depending on where you live. Another really important call to action is to really pay attention to your surroundings and avoid contact with water that has algae blooms. Typically, that will be known via the news. The local news will let you know that there are algae blooms in the area, or there will be signs posted. Either way, if you are near water that smells bad or looks discolored or has like foam and scum mats and like looks like paint-like streaks on the surface, probably just like don't go in that water. especially if you see dead fish or any other animals that are washed up on the shore or beach, just again, don't go in the water. Fishing, swimming, boating, whatever you're doing, avoid that body of water. And that also applies to your pets and your livestock, depending again where you are in the state. And we will include links to some frequently asked questions for red tide and blue-green algae in our show notes if you want to learn about this and more. And Shannon, you want to wrap us up with our last call to action?
Sure. So I get a lot of calls about what people should do if they see an algae bloom, especially in a freshwater system. And there are really easy ways to report algae blooms nowadays. So you can go to reportalgalbloom.com to report a freshwater algae bloom statewide, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Or if you prefer to call, we'll put the phone number in the show notes. Or if you're seeing a fish kill or a lot of fish that just seem like they're not doing too hot, you can also call Florida Fish and Wildlife's Fish Kill Hotline at 1-800-636-0511. We'll put that phone number in the show notes as well. And finally, if you are nearby an algae bloom and you think that you are experiencing any symptoms or illnesses as a result of that algae bloom, you should definitely call the Florida Poison Control Center. And we will put that phone number in the show notes as well. It is 1-800-222-1222. And with that, we want to thank you so much for taking some time to learn about algae and harmful algal blooms in today's episode. We are always here if you have any questions, and we hope you have a wonderful day. Thanks for listening to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. Stay updated on new episodes by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider sharing it with a friend. Naturally Florida is produced by your hosts, Shannon Carnevale
and Lara Milligan.
If you have questions or suggestions, submit them online at naturallyfloridapodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension, an equal opportunity institution. Thank you for listening.